Thursday, February 14th, 2008. Welcome, members. Welcome all come here to talk to us today. It's great to have you here. Great to see you. Maybe we'll just do really quickly. We're all members of the House Education Committee. And John, would you start to introduce yourself and say where you're from?
My name is John Lim. I'm originally from Korea, but I live in Gresham. I represent Gresham. So I was the senator before. Now I'm a House of Representatives. Welcome.
I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick. I represent Northwest Portland and Washington County, and I represent three different school districts, the Portland School District, Beaverton, and Hillsborough School District.
My name is Peter Beckley, and I come from Ashland, and my school district is the Ashland School District and the Talent Phoenix School District, and I also represent a little bit of Medford with the Medford School District.
My name is Representative Betty Comp, and I live in Woodburn, Oregon, which is just north of here, and I represent Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and parts of North Salem.
I'm Representative Jerry Kremel, and I'm from Wilsonville, and the school districts that I represent are Westland, Wilsonville, Sherwood, Gaston, Tiger, Tualatin, Beaverton, Hillsborough, and Forest Grove.
And I'm Representative Arnie Roblin, and I'm from Coos Bay, down on the Oregon coast, and I represent parts of, and most of the school districts from Coos Bay, North Bend, Reedsport, and Florence, Oregon, all on the Oregon coast. And I was the high school principal at Marshfield High School in Coos Bay for 15 years and worked there for 32.
Good afternoon. Did you guys get any cake?
You didn't.
I didn't either. It disappeared.
It was just, really good.
It wasn't fair. And I thought Chair Buckley was going to bring cake in for us today, but I was mistaken. I'm Representative John Huffman, and I live in the Dalles. Have you guys ever been to the Dalles on the Columbia River? One of you has? Maybe you have? Anyway, I represent a lot of school districts out east, way out east.
Cool.
Glad to have you here.
And we're also joined by Brian. Would you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Brian Clem. I'm from Salem, here in just a few blocks away. I live about a mile from here and represent a lot of people here in Salem.
So now you have to repeat back everything you just heard.
Right. I want to make one comment, just
sure.
A quick one. And Mr. Clem, who's at the other end, was a student in my high school when I was the principal.
He was my principal.
Is he a mean principal?
I was in a lot of trouble, so he was appropriate, and I was not going to miss.
And he still can't get him to behave.
Or show up on Vice Chair.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. So, Representative Roblin, does that mean you're now a grandfather to the new baby clam?
I feel like that, yes. I do feel that way, yes.
Well, we're very glad you came here today to talk to us. One thought we had was that maybe to hear from some students and hear about how your experience is in your school would be something that we would need to know, because when we try to figure out how to best serve public schools in the state of Oregon, it's good to hear from the people who are, gosh, right there every day. So thank you for coming, and I'm not sure which order you're going to speak in, but whoever's going to go first, go ahead and just let us know your name and let us know if you have any thoughts about how school's going for you. It's just, yeah, just go ahead and say your name. You don't get too close to the mic, it's very powerful. Just say your name.
I'm Annie, and our school is Cedar Oak Park Primary School. Yeah. We're representing the third grade. We have about 400 kids in our school, and it's in Westland. We have community groups, and we also have a sister school that's in Salem, and we're trying to fix their roof because they have holes in their roof when it rains. They can't have school anymore. And we have enrichment classes, study classes.
Just say your name, pal, and Tell us more about
I'm Jake Nielsen, and right now in the third grade, we're learning multiplication tables and division. We're learning about Oregon. Early in the year, we learned about space.
Excellent. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kendall.
Did they leave anything on the list for you, Kendall? Is there anything left there? So, Kendall, are all three of you from the same classroom?
No. She's from Miss Burris, I'm from Miss Derricks, and she's from Miss Benny.
Oh, fantastic. Do the third graders at your school get along? Do all the classes get along pretty well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kendall, do you like to read?
Mm-hmm.
Do you? Do you have a favorite book that you've read this year?
Which one of those?
Not really.
Do you have a series of books that, not Harry Potter, but I mean necessarily, but I mean.
I was going to say that.
Huh? You were going to say that?
Here.
Jake, you read all of them?
Wow. Jake, way to go. All right. So you guys all like to read, huh?
Yeah.
Excellent. Representative Roblin.
Well, I was just going to ask each one. What's your favorite part of school? What's the subject or thing that you like the best?
I like when we come in the morning and start to read quietly.
Okay.
I like math.
Okay. Yeah, what about you? What's your favorite?
I don't know.
Don't you have a favorite? You must like it all. All right. Place your cup.
I've got an easy one. What's your favorite lunch?
Pizza. Nachos. Pizza.
Very good. What's the hardest thing about school for you?
I would say we're learning our multiplication tables right now, and once you get a little higher into the times tables, they get a little hard.
Mm-hmm. Anybody ready for a test? 12 times 12?
We have to answer.
I'm just kidding.
We have to answer.
That's your long multiplication up here to get that.
Annie, how about you? What's the hardest thing for you in school, just any part of school? Getting up in the morning?
Be quiet when the teacher's talking and
you
want to talk.
That is tough. Our committee has the same problem. How are you, Annie?
Lifelong problem.
Or, sorry, Kendall. Kendall, what's the hardest part for you?
I guess, like, 7, 8, and
multiplication tables.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask, have each of you decided the kinds of things you think you want to do when you grow up?
I want to work for Fender Guitar.
Okay. That's a good thing.
I want to be a veterinarian.
Well, it's great you do well in math, because they're going to expect you to do a lot of math to become a veterinarian, so that's good.
Are you, Kendall, you have any thoughts of what you want to do yet? Me neither. Where does that come?
What college do you want to go to? Have you thought about what college?
Not yet?
Yeah.
No.
Think about it, because in a few years you'll be there.
Representative Greenlee.
Yeah, I want to ask you a serious question. I wonder if you ever hear your parents talking about the problem of there being enough money for the schools. Is that something that you hear them talking about?
My dad wanted to... He was trying to bribe me into... See, what do we under something schools?
Underfund.
Trying to bright? Did he offer you enough?
The request was underfunded.
The problem is I bribed with money instead
of Legos. There you go. So, Jake, do you play guitar already?
No, I want to play the drums, and my dad wants me to play piano first, then I get to play the drums. But I would say my favorite thing to do is soccer.
Ah.
Mine too.
Soccer. Do you play on a league or just play at recess?
I usually never go on to the playground. I'm always on the soccer field, and I've been playing soccer for about 5 years.
Wow. 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 Do you play sports too?
Yeah, I like to do gymnastics.
Gymnastics.
Very good.
Very wow.
Yeah.
So do you have PE at school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like playing volleyball.
All right. And do you have a teacher that just teaches PE, or is it your regular classroom teacher?
Mr. Shuda, he's a great PE teacher.
All right. Very cool. Any other questions? From
one more.
Me too.
Any music at your school?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so do you go out for music? Is it vocal, or do you have band, or which?
We have a choir.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're in the fourth and fifth grade, you have to learn piano or guitar.
Okay.
Wow. Does every student have to take music? Well, that's
wonderful. Oh, yeah, and we're doing recorders right now.
Yeah.
Doing what?
Recorders.
Oh, recorders? Perfect.
Has this been your first trip to the Capitol?
Yes.
Tell us about your impressions of the Capitol building.
I really liked it, especially when we went up and saw the gold man.
All the way up.
It was
kind of
scary going up the stairs.
It was.
What else have you found interesting? Did you like all the echoing in the rotunda?
Yeah.
Well, we're really happy you'll be here. This is your building. This is the people's building, and we hope you'll come and visit it many times.
Okay.
Is that real?
Two things, just because I think they're fun, and I used to take students here all the time for a program called Youth in Government. Right out by the back door, there is a state seal that a person who worked in the public utilities of Springfield, Oregon, and as he had to clean the sewers, gathered up all the things he found that were kind of cute. And he used all of them to make the seal. So you'll see little teeny crabs that he found, and you'll find marbles that he found and keys and all sorts of stuff. And so if you go look at it, it's really kind of fun to look at all the stuff that he found and put together a number of years ago to make the Oregon State Seal. And then he gave it to the Capitol so you could come. So all of us can come and see it. And then the other one that's fun.
Where is that, Representative?
Right by the
which
have you seen it?
No, which is the
back? For a number of years, they made me very upset because it was hidden in the basement. But they put it out, and it's in a proper place. As you go out the back door, and you're facing the back door, which is right down here, over to the left, it's in a big prominent display, and it's about this big around, and it's pretty remarkable. And they also use things like rice and barley and stuff to make an outline around for the different parts of the play, the seal. But it's pretty cool. And just amazing little things that he found. And then the other thing, you need to ask your parents to take you through the tunnels. There's tunnels in our building that'll take you across under the street and over to the other buildings. So that's kind of fun, too.
Awesome.
I can't resist. It's a great place for skateboards.
It's not haunted, though, right?
It is not haunted, I'm afraid. Though we wonder every once in a while when our assistants that help us go missing. Maybe they're wandering around in the tunnels down below. But other than that.
Does your school have plays?
Yeah, in second grade, first grade. All the first graders did this penguin play.
Yeah, that's right.
So you were a penguin?
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Hey, if there's one thing, just one thing you could have to make your school better, what would it be? It's one thing to make your school better. Anything come to mind? Pizza. More recess?
Yeah, longer recess.
Anything you can think of?
A roof that doesn't leak?
Well, that's the school they're raising money for.
Reading longer?
Longer reading? Yeah.
Longer math?
Kendall, anything you can think of? No?
Representative Lynn.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and did you say, what was your name again?
Andy.
Andy, yeah. You mentioned you have, 400 students?
Yeah.
Okay, and let me see. Do you have some Asian students, Hispanic students, some Afro-American students, all combined together?
We have one in our class named Alicia, and she's from Bangladesh.
Okay.
Then another kid in my class named Elora, her grandpa is Japanese.
Yeah.
Okay.
And her mom is Malaysian, and her dad
is Japanese.
Is yeah, half Japanese.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's half Japanese too. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask some technical questions? Many of the students' eye color is different. Some of them are what? Blue. Some of them are green. Some of them are brown. Maybe some of them are black. Who do you, what color of the eye of the people more smarter than the other color?
Whatever,
or the color makes more character more smarter, or can you give me your opinion?
We're all people, and we okay, this is a hard question to
I
answer.
Know. I'm just testing you.
We're all people.
Let me give you that. Are they all, regardless of the color of the eyes, they are all same? Or some color more intelligent, you know, more smart? Or some of them are less because of the color of the eyes? What do you think?
Mm-mm.
All same?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
And our school is pretty great.
Okay. That's really good. They are smart. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you for coming and talking to us. We really appreciate it. We wanted to invite all three of you teachers? Or? Well,
I'm Saskia Dressler. I'm the instructional coordinator at Cedar Oak Park Primary School, and we want to thank you so much for inviting
us. Our pleasure. But would you mind changing places for just a minute so we can ask you some questions about your experiences, if you'd like to?
I don't know which day we talked about school buses.
Yeah, Friday. Yeah.
I don't know, but I just wanted to ask you: do you guys ride the bus?
I go to the YMCA.
I used to.
On the yellow school buses?
I ride the school bus.
Do you feel safe on the school buses?
Well, when I used to ride it, sometimes the bus drivers
would
feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. I had a really good bus driver when I rode the bus, so I was pretty fine.
Mm-hmm. Kendall?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. Annie and Jake and Kendall, thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Have a great rest of your school year.
Okay.
Good luck in fourth grade. Yeah, why don't you guys switch seats? And if you don't mind, we'd just like to ask you what your experience is, and it's your chance to tell people who are making policy what you think of the policy that exists and what you would think. We made better.
Yeah. Thank you so much for inviting us today.
Yeah, if you could repeat your name again.
My name's Saskia Dressler, and I'm the instructional coordinator at Cedar Oak Park Primary School in West Lynn. And I work with...
I'm sorry. Wait, can I get the name of that school and the place?
Our school is called Cedar Oak Park Primary School in West Lynn, Oregon. Lynn.
Thank you.
So we're just south of the Merrillhurst College campus, right by the Willamette River, in a beautiful neighborhood, very supportive community. It's a great place to have a school. We are, as the kids said, our school is about 400 children, and we have pre-K through fifth grade programs. We have two pre-kindergarten programs, one that's three mornings a week for 3 and 4 year olds together, and then one that's 5 afternoons a week for 4 year olds. And then we have three kindergarten classes, an all-day kindergarten, and two half-day kindergartens. And our area of the town is sort of the most built out. So we're one of those schools that we're seeing families sticking around in the neighborhood after their kids have gone on to high school and college. And our school enrollment was dipping, while other parts of our West Lynn Wilsonville School District were growing rapidly. And so our school a few years ago decided to reach out to our community and bolster our early childhood programs to try to draw in new families who were moving into the community and engage them in our school. And we are just so pleased with the success of our preschool programs and how appreciative people in the community are of having this preschool program in the school. We received a grant from the Oregon Community Foundation to build a literacy-focused preschool program, and it's an outstanding program. We also have preschool classrooms at Bolton Primary and Beckman Creek Primary in our school district, and we're opening another preschool at Sunset Primary next year, and Stafford Primary is also looking at that. And we're really excited to see that K-12 education expanding, involving the community. We have it's a Head Start program, so anyone who is approved for Head Start can be part of our preschool. We have great parent programs as well. And so that's something I definitely wanted to share with you about our school district's commitment to early childhood education and how we see that as an investment in a child's lifetime that we can make at the early years that can last and can have a huge impact on their success and on sort of the our success as a whole society if we support children's early childhood education. Our school is also very fortunate to have a PE teacher, a music teacher, and a teacher librarian. Our teacher librarian is a full-time employee. We have about 0.8 FTE of PE and music because we're a little bit smaller than we'd need to be to have full-time. But every class has 2 half-hour periods of PE and music a week and 1 half-hour library period. And then our library is open the rest of the week when there are classes scheduled for research and for small group work. And our library is the heart of the school. It's just bursting with kids all the time and parent volunteers. And there's always activity and learning and inquiry happening in the library. And just some other things our kids mentioned about our sister school. Our school counselor visited Ecuador, and one of her goals when she was visiting with her daughter was to find a school that our school could build a friendship with and a relationship to help our kids see they're part of a bigger world and that their learning and their lives are going to be woven into everyone else's, you know, that we're part of a global community. So we've started a relationship, a friendship with a small school in Ecuador that's called Seyum. And our kids have been doing a lot of learning about Ecuador and about the school, writing to the children at the school, working, developing service learning projects where the kids are all sorts of fundraising efforts, but the fundraising is not the sole purpose. It's more about understanding people around the world, and that is a very strong part of our school, and it's an element of our character education program. Some other things that are part of that program are the community groups that the kids mentioned, our small groups that meet about every 6 weeks, an adult in our school, and all the adults in the school are involved, the entire staff and community members, to meet with a group of 10 students, and they meet throughout the year, once every 6 weeks, and we have lessons prepared, so each group is doing the same lesson on a particular character education topic. And this year, all of our lessons are focused on respect. So we're looking at the idea of respect from many different angles. We're reading about it, doing team building activities about respect. And in this small setting, kids build connections to an adult in the school, an adult who knows them, an adult in addition to their teacher, who might be another teacher or a parent or one of our food service, our kitchen manager is one of the community group leaders, and it's an amazing way to build a strong community in our school. One other thing that our school is really proud of is our Peacekeeper program. It's a fourth and fifth grade leadership program for recess conflict mediation, you could call it. The Peacekeepers go through quite a lot of training. We took them on a challenge course to do some team building training and do trainings with them throughout the year to help them gain skills to be positive problem solvers, to help kids solve problems. And their goal is to help, through solving that problem, help the kids be able to solve their own problems the next time on their own. So if there's a conflict over who was at the tire swing first, that the hope is that then kids would be able to talk those things out and it wouldn't turn into a situation where someone's feelings were hurt or where anything, you know, negative happened. So our school is very committed to character education and to building integrating that program into the educational experience, but that it's also very present, that the kids know that what we do at school, it's about learning, but we do it with good character, and it's something that we're always working to improve. And and I think that we're doing a great job. And we'd love to invite you to visit our school anytime. And I'd love to introduce two parents who would like to talk a little bit as well. Do you want to say anything? Natalie first.
Sure. My name's Natalie Cooper, and I have two children in the school. And I can't speak highly enough about the school. When she was talking about the library, we have a librarian that will pick out specific books for the children if they're going through a specific, a specific time in their life, like their dog is sick or something. And she will pick out a specific book for that child and that reading level. And that just shows you the kind of care and the community involvement in the school is just is amazing. My husband and I have just been blown away by the school. And we actually have the opportunity that our girls have a trust fund that they could go to private school, but we choose to go to this school because it's so phenomenal. I could talk about the academics as well. They were at a private school for a while, and they were doing a lot of just math tables and things like that. And we were kind of wondering, what are you going to do when you go to college and you have to do critical thinking and, you know, critical reasoning and take things apart and that kind of thing. And we were so impressed when we came to Cedar Oak and their math sheets, like their math toes and PONs, they make them think. They have story problems. I mean, I could barely do it. And we were just so gratified because they're teaching them to think and they're going to be able to succeed in college and high school and beyond. But that's what I'd like to say.
I don't know what else there is to say. We've covered it. I'm Michelle Showalter. Kendall is my daughter. I also have a kindergartner at Cedar Oak. And Cedar Oak is the only school that Kendall has gone to, and it's just been a wonderful experience. I think school has changed a lot since I went to school and I was in grade school as far as what they're learning and, like she said, the character building. They begin the morning 10 minutes as an entire school in the gym, you know, discussing writing or maybe a singing group, or I'm not there all the time to know what's going on, but they just share and they know each other. It's not so separate within classrooms. And there's something else I was going to say. I lost my train of thought. I don't know, it's gone. But yeah, although they're just educating the whole person. And I think with, you know, special needs children, I think the children treat them differently than they did when I was in school. And it's such a atmosphere of respect. And I wish that for all the schools in our state.
Yeah, I wish that too. That's fantastic. Thank you very much. Any questions, members, after hearing?
I have one question, Mr. Chair.
Oh.
Yeah. Natalie, right. You mentioned the critical thinking in the math, and so and that you almost couldn't do it. So the question is, are you smarter than a third grader? Just kidding. You don't have to answer.
That's my husband. it's interesting that you bring that up, though. That's often I think that many parents, when they're seeing their children go through the primary school years now, are seeing a very different set of standards than we were seeing when we were in school, and different sort of teaching methods to address those standards, as well as this expanded content that we are asked to present to kids now as educators. Every year there's more. It's not just that there's another year of history to cover, but with technology and understanding, just the concept of how to use a computer, the World Wide Web, all of these things, that school looks different than it did when we were in school. But we really reach out to parents to involve them in their child's education, so teachers are accessible to answer questions. We also do a lot with our websites. Teachers put a lot of assignments on the web, as well as links to places to find help if you need it. And just next week we're offering a parent technology night in our library for third, fourth, and fifth grade parents to attend, to just let parents have the chance to look at our digital library that's available to parents at home and get their hands on the different sorts of equipment that's used in the classroom, so that parents are more comfortable with that. And when their kids ask them for help, they feel better equipped to help them, you know, use the citation maker that's in the OSLIS, which is Oregon School Library Information System, database, and they the kids are like, then the kids will be able to get help from their parents, and we can help educate everybody.
That's very good.
Mr. Chair?
I do have a couple of serious questions.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's great information to have. And either one of you can feel free to answer this, but one of the complaints that I've heard from a variety of folks is that we're not necessarily teaching what's necessary, and that our curriculums have become, I guess the expression that's been used is it's a mile wide but an inch thick, and we're not getting a lot of depth. Do you feel like you're getting depth in the curriculum, that your kids are getting are being able to delve deeper and really understanding the underlying concepts, or do you feel like it's kind of being glossed over and moved forward?
I absolutely think they're getting the depth. That's what we were looking for in the school, and we were so gratified to see that.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. I think Kendall comes home definitely challenged enough, and I think that the teachers are very good at taking the child from what level they're at and raising them up from there, too.
Chair, when you mentioned that's what you were looking for, had your previous experience been where the depth, you didn't feel like the depth of the curriculum was really being provided?
Definitely it could be challenging, but it was more rote, not thinking deeper and that kind of thing.
Okay.
More, you know,
mm-hmm.
7x7.
Okay. That kind of. I feel like they're really using the prior knowledge to delve deeper then and really understand the...
Absolutely. All subjects. I mean,
right.
Even history, you know, not just math. Writing. Writing.
Good. I have one teacher question, if I may. 3 years ago now, we created this thing called the Oregon Virtual School District. And my understanding of the bill, when it passed, was that it was supposed to create this portal for educators to be able to use. And my question to you is, because right now we're at the point where we've thrown $4 million down that hole, and my question to you is, have you as an educator used it, or have the teachers at Cedar Park used it, and are they finding it useful? Are they finding the portal to have the kinds of information that as teachers they need to be able to then use in the classroom?
I'm not familiar with it being called the virtual school district, but are you referring to resources that are within the Oregon Department of Education's website? So, I mean, it's all contained in the ODE website?
There's supposed to be a place on there called the OSVD, OVSD, the Oregon Virtual School District.
I don't know if I've come across that tag and known that I was there, but I'm imagining that I was, because as a teacher, I'm going to the ODE site and using information there about the standards, about assessment, and about there's a lot of information there that I use quite frequently. And I found that there was a recent, I mean, maybe this is what you're talking about, I just don't know the name, that they've reorganized the way that you can search the standards on the website, and I found that to be very helpful, because previously we got the standards, and it was, you've probably seen it, it looks like a newspaper. Have you ever seen the Oregon standards in this newspaper? Which was very helpful to have it in this handy newspaper, but it wasn't so quick if you wanted to find sort of third grade writing and just isolate that and be able to do something with it. And so on the website, there's this reorganization of it that makes it very easy to go to the area and the grade level quite quickly, and then also find some related activities or sort of information beyond just the language of the standards that relates to that standard. And I think teachers are becoming more familiar with that. And so that part of the website, I have noticed there's been some improvement. Is there another area?
It's a different.
It's actually a different animal.
But I'll look for it.
It's supposed to be a portal that you can, for resources to be able to utilize in the classroom, not to go find out what the standards are, not to find out what the policies are, and that sort of thing. It's supposed to be content based. And I was wondering if you, as an educator, have been, because uh, I happened to be a practicing teacher also, and I've never gotten anything from the school or from the state that says this resource is available. And I was wondering if any of our other teaching friends had been.
I haven't.
I'm going to go to Representative Clem and Representative Huffman, and then we have other folks who want to testify as well. So yeah. Representative Clem?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question you touched on a little bit, but so they're third graders, mm-hmm. is that right? And is there a lot of computer usage at the third grade level?
I mean, it's difficult to a term like a lot. I would say that kids are interacting, using some technology on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
We have a district network, and the kids are all familiar, especially at third grade, with how to log in, how to access the internet. They have a student email account that at fourth and fifth grade our students use for research purposes, to send emails to they're researching a particular topic to an individual who could help them learn more about it. The third graders are also doing a lot of keyboarding skills, so they're using AlphaSmarts, which are sort of a laptop-like device, and digital cameras. You guys use those. Some of them are in an after-school class where they're producing like a news program for our school, so they're using video cameras and an iMac and using iMovie. Right, Kendall? You're in Good Morning Cedar Oak. We have document cameras like this in all of our classrooms. We have projectors. So your teachers use technology a lot.
Yes.
And I think it's becoming more just integrated into life, and it's not seen as something different.
Could I just follow up a couple things? So when would be the first, even in kindergarten or first year, when would they first touch a computer for the first time?
Kindergarten. Yeah, our preschools are not really interfacing with technology.
Wow.
Kids walk in, and they know to put the hand on the mouse, and they know about that. And so our perspective is we should start building an understanding that technology is something to use to learn as well as something for entertainment. And if we put off addressing technology, kids might only think of it as something for entertainment, because I think at home, that's with video games and computer games and so many games on the internet. I've had kids say, well, the internet at school is different than the internet at home. Because at school, we launch to our school library page. But we're trying to build that understanding that we can use technology to learn and share information.
Yeah, I think you actually just answered my next question.
Oh, sorry.
But they're getting more at home. They're ahead of the curve by the time they walk in the door. They've been using it at home, generally speaking.
Yeah, I think that these statistics on the screen time that kids have by the time they start school is pretty phenomenal. So they've seen it, they've touched it, and I think if we didn't have computers, after a while the kindergartners would wonder why.
It also probably depends on the neighborhood.
Well, then that was my last question. What percentage doesn't seem to have access at home at all, and what's the effect on that in the... You know, if there's someone who doesn't have one at home, their parents can't log in from home. You know, they only have the parent technology night as maybe their only chance. You know, in your school, it's going to be certainly different than other schools.
Yeah. In our school, I would say for the most part, kids do have access to technology at home, and it seems to be pretty universal that there's access at home. We do have our school library open before and after school, and we have had families that spend time at our school library to use the resources. We make those available for anyone who would want to. But in our area, I think most families have a computer at home, mm-hmm. and internet access. That's been the results from the surveys that are part of the state testing.
How many qualify for the free lunch program?
We are at about 10%.
About 10%. It was in half.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A comment and a question. Representative Crummell is famous for his questions, and I think today he asked the $4 million question. It seems like that maybe we need to pursue. Natalie,
yeah.
You had mentioned your girls went to a school previously, and you really like the culture and education of Cedar Oak. Do you feel the curriculum is, because I've heard a lot of comments about library and reading and story problems and stuff, do you think maybe the curriculum is a little more reading-based than what you had experienced before? Or had you thought about it?
Reading-based.
Is there a strong emphasis on reading and different subjects?
I think there's a strong emphasis on all the subjects, reading and math, and science and writing. So I would say it seems like there's an emphasis on all the areas.
Just well-rounded, huh?
Yeah, very well-rounded.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all three for being willing to share your thoughts with us. Thank you very much. Hey, Jake's dad, did you want to add anything? Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave you out if you had something you want to say. Come on up. No?
Come on.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure you knew you were welcome to. And please stay in touch with us, and if any of us do have a chance to visit, we will take you up on that offer.
Thank you
very much. You've got great kids.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. We have some folks from the community college system as well. J.J. Primlivan and Emily Smith are here, and we are going to be able to ask them some questions, perhaps. Were there other community college students that wanted to testify? We have a couple of some folks from higher ed, too. But we'll start off with these folks. Good afternoon. Thanks. Good to see you.
I'm J.J. Smith. I'm here. I'm Josh from Lane Community College.
Sorry, we got the names switched around. Sorry about that.
Sorry. Right.
Thanks for switching around for us.
And it's actually J.J. Quinlivan.
Right.
I'm Emily Smith from Mount Hood Community College.
Very good.
And also the chair of the Oregon Community College Student Association.
Very good.
All right, so where should we start? First off, we'd like to thank you for the $500 million for community colleges, like for supporting us last year.
We should have been more. Thank you.
And I know you guys don't get things probably nearly as much as you should. So.
Yeah. And thanks for increasing the protection of LGBT students through the passage of the anti-discrimination law. Thank you for protecting them in those issues. It's going to help us out.
Very good.
We also want to encourage you to continue support in the future. Like, it's kind of the big message today is, like, thank you, but with the recession coming up, as you guys know, education's probably going to, like, we're going to have more people in the education system because they're not going to be able to get jobs. So continue the support for education.
Yeah, it's very important for the communities to have the community colleges in them and the regional schools, and it's going to take more investments into them to keep them going.
Very clear message, and I think very well understood by the members of this committee. There's strong support for community colleges on this committee. Are there questions? We'd like to just take a couple minutes and talk to you about your experiences as students. What's it like being a student these days? Because some of us haven't been in the system for a while. So what's it like being a student these days?
It's a lot with financial planning. You have to be able to well-manage financial plan. Otherwise, you can't do it. Or you have to have a good family to support you. You have to have someone else helping you through this because it's really hard to do on your own. It's a real struggle and a battle.
Do you budget like before each year? How do you set up your financial plan?
I chose to go to community college because right now I am going through school and I'm paying off. I am debt free, but I know I want to go to university, so I'm waiting until then to go in major debt because currently I'm paying everything out of my pocket. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah. You have a job while you're
I work at the School for Student Government, and I also work for Pepsi. I'm a merchandiser for Pepsi, and they're very helpful. They work around my school schedule.
That's excellent. And so approximately how much a month is your income that allows you to be a student at the same time?
I make about $1,000 a month.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing. And it's allowing me to put a little money away in the pocket, too. Because I also get grants. A talent grant through Student Government Lane.
Very good. There's a grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you do a lot of the community colleges have on-campus housing, and do you participate in that, or do you? I don't know. Maybe you go to a community college just in the town that you're from, but.
Lane doesn't have one on the campus. We're kind of the outskirts. We have a good deal with LTD bus system, but we all pay student fees. But there is I do believe there's a housing committee, but it's inside the city, away from the school. It's not near it. So they do have a little option that. We are strongly based. Mainly the reason most of our students come from rural areas, and they drive there. So most people have at least a 10-mile drive to school. I have a 45-minute drive.
Mount Hood also does not have any on-campus housing. As far as I know, like from just my networks with other community colleges, as the chair of OCCSA, the only community college that I'm aware of at this point that has on-campus housing is Central Oregon Community College.
Southwestern has a bunch.
Oh, do they?
Treasure Valley has one, too.
Well, just that's good to know.
How do you handle the life of a student? Are you working or yeah?
Yeah, life as a student. Money's a huge deal. Textbook cost, tuition. It seems like it goes up every year. I work. I am a full-time student. I do student government. A big part of it is just my love for student government in general. Like, I've been doing it all of my life. But another part is the 12-credit tuition waiver that I get from it. If it wasn't for that, I don't know if I would be able to go to school. And I know a lot of the other people in my student government and in other student governments that I've been in contact with, their sole reason for doing student government or speech and debate or athletics is because they can get money from it. I also work. My income's about $600 a month, which is pretty little. I'm a children's fitness instructor, actually. kind of fun. And I still get some child support from my father. So that's about another $300 a month. So
piece it together.
Good. Yeah, piece it together and be pretty frugal.
in terms of your academic career, are you able to get the courses that you need to get on a timely basis, or is that a struggle each term to figure out if you've got the right class structure?
Like course offerings?
Yeah, course offerings in terms of what you need to. I'm assuming you plan to be there for 2 years and move on, and are you getting the courses you need to move on?
Actually, so far, like, this is my second year at a community college, and I will be staying for a third to finish my associate's degree. But so far, I haven't really had any problem up until this last term. I registered for a French class, which is a requirement to get into university as a second language, and they didn't have enough students in it, so they just dropped it. And because I'm involved in student government, I wasn't able to take the only other French class that they offered. I already bought the book, which lasts like all three terms, so that's kind of unfortunate. It's about a $100 book. That's part of my reason for staying another year. It's just trying to get the credit, but it's really unfortunate.
I've had problems getting classes because they only offer at one time, and I have other things that I can't be there for, so it's sometimes really hard. You have to really look ahead and really plan out in very detail, because a lot of times you have to change your schedule and take a class later on that you would prefer to take before another class. So it makes it a little harder because you have to really balance that out. It's a juggling act to deal with your schedule.
And do you have a counselor that works with you?
I've went to the counselor twice. I haven't been back in a while. It's just I haven't had time. I need to go back there and work with them again. But Lane does have a pretty good counseling system.
Okay. Very good. How would you rate the quality of the education? Is it consistently high quality? Do you feel like it's sometimes great, sometimes not so great? What would be your thought on the quality of education?
I'd say for the most part, I'm getting what I pay into it. It could always be proven. There's room for improvement. Sometimes it's a little shaky, but other times it's way better than what you thought. So it's one of those things that goes up and down. But I'd say it's just kind of a mediocre level. I think there's a great room for improvement on it.
If I can go ahead and answer that question, too. I found, like, at the community college, it really depends on the teacher and, like, I guess the quality of your teachers that you have. I've had some excellent teachers. Like, I can't imagine having better teachers than some of them. But then I've had some pretty poor teachers, too, where I really don't feel like I got my money's worth out of the class.
Very good. President Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lane Community College and yours?
Mount Hood.
Have either one of you, speaking of the counseling situation, have either one of you run into a situation? You had mentioned that you're going to be going into a third year. Part of it was the reason for the French class. But do either one of you find yourself in a situation where you sat down with a counselor before you started your freshman year, and now you look back and you go, shoot, I was told I needed to take this class and this class for my transfer credits or for whatever reason, and you look back and go that those classes were not necessary after you had taken them? Has that happened in your careers?
I have not had that experience, but I know some other people had experiences like that. Some people come in talking about one degree, and so they get a schedule built around it, and they find out that there's a lot of things they're missing that won't transfer and don't work, and then they end up not going because of the situation that happened. They felt like they were lied to, and it turns them away from going to school.
Now, has this happened in the last year or two?
It's happened in the last 2 years.
Okay.
I have an experience that I think the biggest problem Mount Hood has with that is just not being, the students not being informed with what actually transfers and what doesn't, like under 100 level math, just not knowing that, and that just not being communicated to them well.
So. Areas for improvement.
Yeah.
Thank you very much both for coming to visit with us today and give us your opinions. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, best of luck.
Thank you.
We have Emily McLean and Ryan Kluth.
Or someone else.
Hello.
Hi.
I used to teach that.
We actually have Mike Filippelli because Ryan Kluth was unable to join us today.
Yeah. We are rigidly flexible with this community.
We appreciate that.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Emily McLean. I'm the student body president at the University of Oregon and also the chair of the Oregon Student Association, a group that Mr. Clem knows, of course, and that a lot of you guys might know represents over 100,000 students across the state of Oregon.
Hi, and for the record, my name is Mike Filippelli. I am the legislative coordinator for the ASUO, the student government at U of O. I work for Emily, and I also serve on the OSA board as well as the student commissioner on the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
So, first of all, of course, we wanted to thank you so much for letting us be here and give testimony and answer questions that you guys might have about post-secondary education, of course, particularly higher education in the university system. But the first thing that we wanted to do before we got into that was thank you guys for a historical reinvestment in higher education this last year. It was the first reinvestment in higher education in a decade, and it meant a lot to students, and we wanted to thank you for that because it was a significant reinvestment in the sense of just the increases to the Oregon University system, but also the efforts that you made on multiple fronts, ranging from child care to the work that we did on tuition caps and making sure that we really did increase and maintain access and affordability for all Oregonians. So thank you very much on behalf of U of O and all of the member schools of the Oregon Student Association.
I particularly wanted to thank you for your, both the creation and then the funding for the shared responsibility model. I think it's really important. I think it, you know, allows more students to receive the Oregon Opportunity Grant than it ever received it before. Personally, when I attended college, I got a Pell Grant and the Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grant, which is a federally state-matched or university-matched grant. After freshman year, I lost both of those grants, and I'm sort of just over that line of where you'd, you know, receive the grant. And since it had been that cliff before, you know, I got nothing. Under the new system, I'm going to be graduating this year, but next year I would receive the grant.
Sorry, if I
was still going to be a student. So I really would like to thank you for that, and also for funding the Aspire program for the first time in the state budget. You know, it's only at $700,000, but hopefully next session you guys can correct that and fully fund that. all high schools can get it.
Thank you.
That is an on-message.
That was on-message, yeah.
No, I think I do, but that's great.
Representative Greeley.
Yeah. First, I want to acknowledge the gift from the Associated Student Organization of some very nice cake that was assured to be under $50, and I shared with my colleagues before.
If you haven't received your lunch yet, we have more for you.
Two of them might be too expensive.
That's true. It might go over the limit.
We heard last night in some very interesting testimony that Oregon students who were beginning college weren't finishing college for a variety of reasons, and I assume that meant at the community college level weren't getting the AA degree, and at the university level weren't getting bachelor's degrees. And we got into a set of discussions about the extent to which the way we were funding education was rewarding having a lot of students in class the third week of class, but wasn't rewarding students graduating, and there were some proposals that students be financed based on some piece of the financing, universities and colleges, some piece of the funding be based on how many they actually graduated rather than how many students they had in week three of class, and a variety of things. Do you guys have some sense of, A, what's going on with the fact that we have a relatively low, way down the bottom of the country, of students finishing colleges and universities, and the extent to which we finance higher education? Do you have a sense of, to what extent we finance it somehow rewards the wrong things in the structure of our post-secondary education system?
Well, I think to answer that question, you have to start at the issue of students not finishing and students leaving our campuses. I think that one of the things that we wanted to talk about was that the legislature and the statewide students association have made steps to work together on recruitment and retention of communities of color, of first-generation students in the university system. And I think that that's where the issue starts, is that if students don't feel that they belong or feel that they have the resources to continue in college. So, for example, a lot of communities of color are very debt-averse. And so when you don't have access to as much need-based aid or as much assistance in just getting to college, like planning, like things like the Aspire program, then you're not very likely to finish college. And so I do want to get to the funding, but I think that the first step is actually retaining those students, recruiting them through things like the Aspire program, but then making sure that we aren't on the bottom of the list of funding per student like we are about 47th now, or in the mid-20s in the country for need-based aid. I think those are the main issues that we need to focus on, that we've made strides forward for in Oregon, and I've been really happy to be here to work with you guys on that, and we've made those first steps, but a lot of the issues are the students that are not likely to be in college in the first place. You know, they're the ones that are leaving, and if we're not working on the recruitment and retention of students and faculty of color, if we're not working on, you know, more efforts like the anti-discrimination bill to make LGBTQ students welcome on campus and to make sure that we're meeting everyone's needs, we're never going to move forward. But to answer the funding issue, I know that you guys were told basically you needed to put a whole lot more money into post-secondary education, right? Like just a lot more than looks possible, maybe with a bad forecast. And I think that one of the things that we've been talking about for the last couple years is that to get a good job, to get a higher paying job, and to kind of get out of your, you know, income bracket or anything like that, I think that the working group from the Oregon University system said that 85% of higher wage jobs would require a college degree within the next decade. And so we're in a time where we're educating fewer Oregonians when it's more important than ever to have a college degree. And so I think that we need to focus on the fact that things like you guys heard, we're, you know, importing more expertise than we're actually educating and creating ourselves in Oregon. And so we need to start selling everybody on the argument that education is where we start first to be able to get the business community growing, to be able to get the engaged citizenry that we need. And so, I mean, when you guys are sitting representing, education, this is where we have to start for the rest of the state to be healthy financially and to be healthy and growing in all other senses, is education comes first.
Can I follow up on that?
Absolutely.
All that is true. They did tell us we need to spend more money, but they also told us, I think I heard, that they need to that we need to be prepared to distribute that money differently. So let's just imagine this scenario. X dollars, whatever that amount, goes into the higher education budget. Right now, whatever money that is distributed largely on the basis of the number of students among, mm-hmm. at least among the state system of higher education. I'm not sure about the community college, but in the state system of higher ed, it's distributed on the number of students at a point in time, so that you take all the students and you roughly divide the money up. It's not exactly that simple. What if that money was divided up on the basis of the number of graduates rather than the number of students? The number of students graduated during the last year. Wouldn't you argue then that more resources of the amount that goes to, say, University of Oregon would be would be contributed to making sure the kind of programs you suggested at the beginning of your statement happen?
Representative Greenlick, Chair Buckley, I think...
And I'm not proposing that's what we would do.
Well, I think it's an interesting question. I think what that does bring up, though, is that there's always going to be some drop-off. There's always going to be students who, for some personal reason or for some other reason, cannot finish college or have to drop out or, you know, in some cases, and this is, in you know, for most cases, larger with community colleges, as I was speaking with Josh before, was, you know, when students sometimes are offered a very good job, they'll drop out of college because they see it as a better opportunity and they're not taking on debt. I think when you're setting up that situation where someone's rewarded at the back end, you know, that's discouraging almost for some people to go to college. You know, people know that there's a chance something could happen and they might have to stay another year or they might have to come back later. And if they're, you know, like say, for instance, if you're setting up a system where you're paying a higher, I mean, if you're holding back some money on the basis of they'll get the, like the university system will get the money, like at the end when students graduate, then that money, that like money that's not in the system is going to have to come from somewhere. Where it's most likely going to come from is from raised tuition. And so you're discouraging more students both on sticker shock, where they're going to see that price of the education and say, okay, you know, I'm from a low or middle income family. I don't know if I can afford to take that on. But then you're also going to see students who maybe if they think they can get a good job will take, you know, take that chance as opposed to going to college, just because, you know, they don't want to take on debt in the off chance that something happens and they need to provide for their family or help out in other ways and can't stay for the full 4 years, the first 2 years.
I would add to that that, and this is the first thing that first time that I've heard this, and so it's just an interesting conversation to have, is that one of the first things that came to my mind is that the regional universities or some of the schools that have been struggling, such as Eastern Oregon University, Southern, they might be adversely affected by a new system like that immediately, because if their graduation rates were not as high or their dropout rate was higher, at a time when we're trying to build up the regionals and make sure that the communities in rural Oregon have a strong university system school there, that then that would kind of start feeding people into the University of Oregon or feeding people into Portland State or OSU away from communities that really need to have a strong base of higher education. So the implementation of some sort of plan like that would worry me because of how important I think the regional universities are and how much more support they need at this time. So that's just an idea. But
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did you have something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They answered my question, but I would just like to take this opportunity to say what phenomenal communicators all four of you have been today. Very articulate, thoughtful, and I really appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Being considerate of the regionals is appreciated, too. Any other questions? Any other thoughts about your lives as a student individually and as well as the students you represent? What else do we need to know? Anything?
I'm in my senior year, my fourth year at the University of Oregon, and I'm going to be graduating with $32,000 in debt.
$32,000.
Yeah. And so I think fully funding the shared responsibility model next year at $101 million. I think you set up this model. I think it's great, and I think it's one of the, you know, a model for the nation in many ways. But if we don't fully fund it, we're not going to, you know, completely fill in the affordability gap. And a lot of students aren't going to, you know, get the money they need. There's going to be caps for students, whereas, you know, they would receive more money if there weren't those caps. And I think it could just be, you know, a phenomenal program if fully funded.
Mike, did you work for most of the 4 years you've
I've worked every year. And I have two jobs right now. One's student government, so I don't get very much money from that. Unlike some schools, we don't get
tuition waivers.
pretty cool program, but our stipends come from student fees, so we have to keep that as low as possible. So that only pays about $125 a month.
Yeah.
Then my other job is at for the child care subsidy. It's a program that gives 20% to 50% reimbursement to student parents for their child care costs. So I get to see a lot of those issues as well. And, you know, a lot of students who, you know, going back to the previous conversation, sometimes can't stay in school because they have to take care of their kid and they have to, really you know, work full time and then to have childcare, which is really expensive, and then pay for school, which is really expensive. So I get to see a lot of those issues. So.
Did you say the ASUO state, or what are you, what's your position, government affairs, basically, or state affairs? It's how much? $125 a month?
Yeah.
For 9 months? You don't get it during the summer?
No.
We only have a couple of stipended positions during the summer.
Come let me campaign for you to get a... 15 years ago, I had your job at OSU, and I was getting $365 a month.
I don't know.
15 years ago. I know the students...
They have to pay for basketball arena.
Well, you got to convince your fellow students to...
Let's talk about that. You have an opinion on it?
On what?
The basketball arena.
The salaries or the basketball arena?
I have an opinion on the arena. I know that Representative Comp has a question. I have one more thing, too, about...
Please, why don't you go ahead and...
With the arena. Go ahead.
Okay.
What's your opinion?
Another thing that to keep on this subject, and then we can move to other things, and they will be great, is that I think with the revenue forecast, I think with the way that higher education received such a great reinvestment this last year, we need to figure out how to continue that momentum for post-secondary education. And I think one of the ways that we could really work together on this is tuition interest earnings for the Oregon University system, which I don't know if you guys have been able to hear about this. I know some of you guys have. The idea that the interest earned off of our tuition dollars goes back into the general fund. And one of the things that the Oregon Student Association and a lot of folks in this building have been talking about for the last year is the possibility that another $19 million of revenue could be put into the Oregon University system. And I think in a time that we might need to be creative in the 2009 session, in a time that we need to be looking for alternative revenue streams, that looking at the interest earned off of tuition dollars, the interest that is earned off of, you know, my dollars and Mike's dollars and your dollars put together, why not put them back into education as they're already headed there in the first place? So that's one thing that I'd really like to put on the table and have a conversation about if you're interested, but I think that it would be a really great way for us to creatively fund.
I think that's a great proposal to push, and I'd be glad to help you fight the ways and means on that one.
Mr. Chair, did we not do that?
We did not.
On the back we went the other steal your $19 million?
We did. We went the other way. I mean, every bill that came out, all the interest went back to the
fund.
So keep an eye out if we ever agree to do it, that they don't
take
then
another
just take 19.
19
of general fund.
Right.
That was the problem last year, so I would propose not to do that.
That's right.
I've been looking at Vice Chair Compton.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. Just a quick question for each of you to answer. Where were you born, and then where do you hope to get a job?
You want to start?
Sure. Well, I was actually born originally in Syosset, New York. It's on Long Island, New York. My family moved here when I was a little over 3.5. And I've lived in Beaverton, Oregon, right after I graduated high school. My mom moved to Sherwood, Oregon. Representative Cromwell is actually her state representative. And then my dad's in Tigard. Now I'm in Eugene for, you know, another few months, and I hope to get a job either in Eugene or Portland, probably after I graduate.
Okay. And what are you majoring in?
Political science, and then my minors are in 3PM, which is planning, public policy and management, and nonprofit administration.
Wow, we'll be seeing a lot of you, I bet.
Yeah, you will. I was born at St. Vincent's in Portland, and I grew up in Forest Grove, Oregon, out in western Washington County. And as to the job question, I am not sure. I'm graduating in June, and I'm interested in maybe working on a campaign between June and November. I'm taking the LSAT in June.
I'm going to say what's going
on. You're the one
there. That's Rep Huffman.
He's cool. You're about the same as your student body.
Thank you.
Representative,
thanks.
As soon as you in Mount Hood, in my district area, you should work out with me.
You have lots of offers here.
That's not
Oh, yes, you are.
Okay, there you go. You have some more
involvement. Thank you. Yeah.
It's a job fair, political job fair today.
Point of order, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't think we should be recruiting campaign help for the diocese. Somehow, I think there's a conflict of interest.
It's keeping Oregon students Oregon graduates working.
That's a conflict of interest here. Probably
at least it was only one party going.
Emily, did you want to give us an opinion on the arena, since that question was brought up?
Oh, wow. I think that the arena at the University of Oregon is a very contentious topic at the moment.
It is.
Because of the discussion of the possibility of maxing out bond debt within the University of Oregon. Some of you guys might know, it's interesting that we're both from U of O. I apologize for a lack of representation, but at the U of O, there have been multiple initiatives to improve campus life for students and to improve the academic quality of the buildings, of the resources, and also to just make improvements to the general campus. President Frohnmayer and a lot of the folks from the University of Oregon have made many presentations in front of the Oregon University System, State Board of Higher Ed, that I've had the opportunity to listen to. And earlier this year, they were about strategic housing plans. And earlier this year, they were about the student experience on campus. And I appreciated that. I don't know if you guys know this, but in some of the magazines that go around ranking university dorm rooms, the U of O ranks at the bottom of the list usually. And I think that in a
top
time.
Top of the bad list.
Top of the bad list.
The bad list.
Yeah, I didn't live in the worst.
Dorms like Mountains is the quote.
My oldest son's a senior U of O this year, and he stayed in the dorms as a freshman, and I was horrified when we moved to
the dorms. Was he in Bean?
He was what?
Was he in Bean Hall?
He was in one of the honor dorms. I can't remember.
Earl?
You know. Yes.
Yeah. In the Walton complex, yeah. Some of the oldest ones.
They're slightly nicer, actually.
But so my point is that I believe that there are competing interests at the U of O for bond debt, and I think that when you look at F bonds particularly, those are the kinds that will be used on the strategic housing initiative, and so I'm pretty concerned that we are pushing back initiatives that have been at the forefront and are really necessary to make, you know, what we call the flagship university a more appealing place for students to come, because I really do believe that the housing experience and the experiences that you have, you know, in the buildings will determine your interest in staying at the U of O or coming there in the first place. And so, you know, I think that there are conflicts with the arena, and helped put on a forum with President Frohnmayer and Mr. Kilkenny with students about 2 weeks ago, and students are not satisfied yet with the answers that they're receiving about the arena. They're not sold on it. I did a, you know, raise your hand if you're all for the arena. There are about 5 or 10. Raise your hand if you still have a lot more questions and you're not really decided, and most of the room went up. And then there are quite a few diehards that are not in support of the arena. And so I think that there's going to be a discussion in Ways and Means today at 3:30 that I'll hopefully be attending just to listen to that. But keep your ears open for really the reality and what how realistic it is to pursue such a venture as the state of Oregon. I think that we really need to look at what we want to do with education in a time when we're talking about how to fund and recruit and retain students. I think personally that we should be focusing on the student experience and on making sure that we have an educated citizenry that is having a good experience in their university. So.
Well, I'm glad the question came up, and I really appreciate your response. It's information we need to know.
Yeah.
Additional questions?
Don't forget the now and laters. We put those in because we wanted to say thank you, and don't forget us later. And let us know if you guys need another bag lunch for somebody.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time, and wish you the best of luck as you finish off your academic careers at U of O and move on out to the next steps.
Thanks for letting us be here today.
Thank you. Well, that was a very informational hearing, I would say. And I appreciate your time, consideration, members.
I could see the seeds of the younger students turning into these guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Members, today is Thursday. We are meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We'll be hearing from the university system and also from the community colleges in response to some of the information we provided last night that Representative Greenlick referenced today. So until then, till 1 o'clock tomorrow, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.